And here's what we're dealing with today, Brother Jim, how communism or Marxism is knocking on the door of the United States of America.
I think that's, I'm not sure that's a strong enough title.
Yeah. And it's actually been knocking on the door of the United States of America for a long time,
yes,
saying, let me in, let me in.
That's right.
And I guess I wanted to move into this subject after painfully enduring some of the debates that are currently taking place in the presidential Democratic primary.
Yes.
What is the end game of Satan? Let's go there first. Do you have the book of Revelation chapter 13 and verses 16 through 18? Because this is ultimately what Satan wants to do. Revelation 13 verses 16 through 18.
All right, we're reading from the New American Standard Version 95 update, and we're reading Revelation 13 verses 16 through 18. And he causes all, the small and the great, and the rich and the poor, and the free men and the slaves, to be given a mark on their right hand or on their forehead, and he provides that no one will be able to buy or to sell except the one who has the mark, either the name of the beast or the number of his name. Here is wisdom. Let him who has understanding calculate the number of the beast, for the number is that of a man, and his number is 666.
So when I look at what Satan, you know, wants to accomplish in the end times, I mean, that would be it.
Yeah.
It's a centralized government that micromanages people from cradle to grave. They can't even participate in terms of providing for themselves unless they receive a mark.
Yeah.
So you're really dealing with maximum government.
Yeah.
And, you know, we've had Curtis Bowers here teach at our church before. Mm-hmm. He basically goes around and does films and talks on the infiltration of communism into the United States and worldwide. And I was with him at a Stealing the Mind conference a couple years ago. So I had a chance to talk to him one-on-one. And I said, what's the end game? I mean, what's the final project going to look like as far as Satan is concerned? I said, is one world communism where everything's moving to? Is that the strategy that's in place everywhere? And he said, without a question, that's, you know, the goal.
Yeah.
Now, if that's the goal, then something stands in the way. And it has to do with the United States Constitution and the United States government. Mm-hmm. Because if the United States Constitution stands for anything, it stands not for maximum government that we see in Revelation 13, but limited government.
Amen. Yeah.
And notice this quote here from D. James Kennedy and Jerry Newcomb. Co-authored a book a couple of years ago entitled, What If the Bible Had Never Been Written? And this is what they say on page 96 concerning the United States Constitution.
All right, quoting here, folks. How many powers does the federal government have? Today, it almost seems to be an infinite number because of Supreme Court decisions and runaway legislation. But the founding fathers in the Constitution gave the federal government specifically 20 powers. There are only 20 things that the federal government is supposed to be able to do. All the rest remained with the states or the people. Even the enumerated powers were limited by checks and balances, close quote.
I mean, that to me is just startling. To go back to the United States Constitution and to figure out that the feds are only supposed to be involved in 20 things.
Yeah.
You know, today they're involved in everything. But when our Constitution was set up, only 20 things they were supposed to do. And even as this quote explains, those were limited by checks and balances and what have you. And what you have in the way of Satan is, I think, the most ingenious invention that's ever been created. It's the United States Constitution. Mm. And that is sort of a straitjacket on him and his goal for one world communism at the end of the age.
Yeah.
And so at some point, this brilliant structure that our founding fathers gave us, you know, has to be toppled. In fact, if you were to go home today and read the United States Constitution, do you know how many pages it would span? Including the Bill of Rights, it would span 11 pages.
11 pages. Wow.
Now compare that to, what is Obamacare, 3,000 pages or something to that effect. You know, it's just mind-boggling the direction we're moving in versus what the original foundation of the country was.
Amen. That's right.
And I had the privilege of meeting Phil Haney. Phil Haney is a former Homeland Security officer, and he figured out through engineering and logarithms and all these things really smart people can come up with, how to track Muslim terrorists into the country. Hmm. And the problem is, he was so good at his job, the Obama administration and the Bush administration before him, you know, basically got rid of him. Mm-hmm. Because they were trying to make more of a politically correct Department of Justice and Homeland Security and things of that nature. But he wrote a book. Yeah, shame on them. Exactly. He wrote a book. I'd encourage people to get it and read it. It's called See Something, Say Nothing by Philip Haney. And he's another guy I had a chance to interact with one-on-one. And one of the points that he made that I've heard him make has always stuck with me. He says the goal of communism, and we might throw into there Islam, because Islam and communism right now are really good friends.
Yes.
The enemy of my enemy is my friend.
Right.
And they'll be really good friends until they get rid of what they want to get rid of, the United States Constitution. Then they'll go to war with each other.
Yeah.
But he made the point that the goal of these groups, whether you're talking about Sharia law, whether you're talking about global communism, is to topple the United States Constitution and to remorph it into a worldview that's akin to their own. Because they know that as it currently exists, it can't stand or it's in contradiction, you know, to where they want to go. And it's amazing how successful the communists have been in infiltrating our government over a long period of time.
Yes.
In fact, there were 45 goals of communism read into the congressional record January 10th, 1963. 45 of them.
Yeah.
And here are just 10 of the 45 from the Karl Marx's Communist Manifesto, created in 1848. And it's amazing how even these have gotten some kind of inertia in our culture. Would you mind reading those to us?
All right, folks, you should be able to see this on your screen. Number one, abolish private property. We haven't heard anything about that lately, have we? Number two, heavy progressive income tax.
Punish people that are successful.
Yeah. Number three, abolish rights of inheritance.
Now, why would they want to do that? Because communism, the state is God.
Yes.
And you want to destroy the family.
That's
right. And you want to destroy the family's ability to pass its wealth on.
That's right. Number four.
So when you die and you come under a certain tax bracket, you have to visit the undertaker and you have to visit the IRS agent, you know, on the same day if someone dies in your family.
Wow. Do I have to keep reading?
Yeah, if you
could. Oh my goodness. Number four, confiscation of property rights. Mm-hmm. Number five, a central bank.
Mm-hmm.
Number six, government ownership of communication and transportation. Number seven, government ownership of factories and agriculture. Eight, government control of labor. Number nine, corporate farms, regional planning. And number 10, free education for all children in public schools, combination of education with industrial production.
So free everything.
Free. That sounds like a commercial on TV.
And of course they want to promote free education because that gives them a chance to brainwash people.
Yes.
You know, in the new system of communism.
Yes.
From K through 12 and beyond.
And they're doing it.
And they're doing it.
Yeah.
And Ronald Reagan made this point in a speech called A Time for Choosing, given October 27th, 1964, and he made the point of why America is really the chief prize, if you will, mm-hmm. of this one world communism that's on the horizon. Would you mind reading what he
All
says
right,
there?
All right, gladly. All right, this is from Ronald Reagan, 1964, A Time for Choosing, quoting, "Not too long ago, two friends of mine were talking to a Cuban refugee, a businessman who had escaped from Castro. And in the midst of his story, one of my friends turned to the other and said, 'We don't know how lucky we are.' And the Cuban stopped and said, 'How lucky you are. I had some place to escape to.' And in that sentence, he told us the entire story. If we lose freedom here, there's no place to escape to. This is the last stand on earth," close quote.
Yeah, and you think about that quote, and, you know, when Cuba fell, Cuban refugees had somewhere to go.
Yeah.
The United States.
Yeah.
Well, what if the United States comes under the same frame of mind that now dominates Cuba? Where do you flee to?
There ain't anywhere.
So that's why now we're in a situation here in the United States where basically every election is such a big deal.
Yes, sir.
And so this is sort of intro to where we want to go as we talk about how communism is now knocking down the door of the United States of America.
Yeah.
I brought in Brother Jim Show and Tell.
Oh boy.
And I don't know if we have a computer image of this, but this is a book called Beating the Unbeatable Foe by Dr. Fred Schwartz. Dr. Fred Schwartz wrote this, I think, around 1953.
Oh, my.
He had a ministry when he used to put out a report called the Schwartz Report.
Mm.
And he was one of these guys that was a medical doctor, and he was sort of on the leading edge of tracking the infiltration of communism all the way back in the 50s. Into education, into government. And he would go out and he would have these open debates with communists.
Mm-hmm.
And he influenced a ton of people. And one of the persons he influenced was a guy named David Noble.
Oh, yes.
Who started Summit Ministries.
Yeah.
And he also influenced a guy named Norm Geisler, who went on to be, you know, a really key apologist in Christianity. And so when we
I'll hold that up for you while
please.
You're talking.
As we're talking about communism knocking on the door of the United States of America, our point is we're not really getting into something that's brand new here. This is something that's been going on for an awful long time.
Yes.
It's just, it's become more to the surface with one of our major political parties, which we'll make reference to, in just a second. But, you know, Brother Jim, when I grew up, there used to be something called a moderate Democrat.
Yes.
A conservative Democrat.
Mm-hmm.
I remember names like Robert Casey.
Mm-hmm.
I think of Pennsylvania, who was a pro-life Democrat. There was a guy named Zell Miller, who I think was from Georgia. He was a conservative Democrat. I may have Zell Miller's state wrong, but you guys get the point. And I remember as a very young Christian having a lot of admiration for a senator named Sam Nunn, who was a conservative Democrat.
Right. Mm-hmm.
In other words, what you used to have is Democrats versus Republicans, conservatives versus liberals.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm here to tell you, Brother Jim, that there isn't any such thing as a conservative Democrat anymore.
No, there isn't.
It's almost like they're an endangered species. So the battle that's going on politically in our country is not even so much Republican versus Democrat, conservative versus liberal. As you watch these presidential debates, here's basically what the distinction is. Someone that's an American versus a traitor.
Mm.
I know that sounds harsh.
Wow.
Someone that's a constitutionalist versus someone that has virtually no respect for the Constitution at all.
Right.
Because one of our major political parties has been completely taken over.
Infiltrated
by this communist Marxist
they have.
Mindset.
Yeah.
And we're going to deal in this show, and we'll probably do another one after this because we don't want this to go too long, some of the radical, and I mean radical associations connected with, and we only have time to cover two of the candidates.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and you can take what we're doing here and apply them to all of them on the Democratic side.
Yes.
And I think these radical connections are things we need to pay attention to, we need to look at, because there was a president, you remember, who ran named Barack Hussein Obama. And he got into office and he turned out to be one of the most liberal presidents in American history.
Right.
And yet the whole thing could be read or telegraphed in advance. Mm-hmm. Because of his very radical associations.
Yes.
To a particular pastor named Jeremiah Wright, mm-hmm. who ended up being influenced by Cone, mm-hmm. a theologian named Cone, mm-hmm. who was a liberation theologian.
Right.
Who was
right.
basically trying to mix Marxism with the Bible. Mm-hmm. By the way, this mixture of Marxism with the Bible is what's called the social justice movement.
Oh, yeah.
It's spreading right now all over the SBC, the Southern Baptist Convention.
Yeah.
And in fact, my friend, Jeff Dornick has just produced a book called Social Injustice. You might hold that one
hot
up.
Off the press.
Hot off the
folks.
Press. And it's dealing with the infiltration of Marxism into theology in our own day, into the evangelical church.
Yes.
And he's got a bunch of authors there. I was privileged to write one of those chapters, but if you're interested in watching communism not only come into the government of the United States of America, but also hijacking religion itself, and communists have always been very interested in religion,
mm-hmm.
And they're not trying to make us full-blown communists. Mm-hmm. What they're trying to do is come up with a style of religion or a system of theology that would desensitize us mm-hmm. to the infiltration mm-hmm. of communism. And so you can call that liberation theology, also
yeah.
goes by the title social justice theology,
right.
where Jesus is sort of changed into a communist revolutionary
right.
or a social revolutionary. And
yeah.
so all of these writers, take a look at that from different angles. And so this is something that's happening right before our very eyes. It's happening in our churches. It's happening in our seminaries.
Yeah.
It's happening in our politics. And this is why we need to pay attention to, you know, radical associations.
Yeah.
Like Obama was affiliated not only with Jeremiah Wright, he was also affiliated with a couple named, I forgot the husband's name. Bernadine Dorn. And what was the husband's name? I can't remember. But anyway, yeah. the two of them were like a husband
yeah.
and wife
Bill
team.
Ayers.
Bill, there we go. Bill Ayers,
Bill Ayers. Yeah.
and Bernadine Dorn.
Yeah.
In fact, Obama launched his presidential campaign, if I'm not mistaken, in their
yeah.
home.
That, yeah, that's right.
And so these are the kinds of people that he was hanging with.
Yeah.
And so does it stand any reason that he would end up being an extremely radical president when his pastor of 20 years is a liberation theologian
yeah.
and the people that he hangs with are two terrorists
yeah.
from the 60s?
Yeah.
So that's why we're bringing up some of these things. And
you know, he was bad enough, but what we've got on the horizon right now is worse.
Yeah, and thanks for saying that. That's the point we're trying to get at here.
Yeah.
Now, I understand a lot of people out there have issues with Trump, and I understand Trump has issues, but Trump, as imperfect as he is, does not have the radical associations that we're going to bring up with two people.
Right.
That seem to be very popular now in the Democratic field. One of them is the current front runner, Bernie Sanders.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And another one is one that has, an individual that has done well in some of the prior primaries. I don't know how well he's doing lately. But his last name is Buttigieg, Pete Buttigieg. And how much do you really know about these two people? And I think this study that we're going to do here is going to be sort of instrumental, because the liberal press or the liberal media sort of scratches their heads and they don't really understand why the evangelical community stands behind Donald Trump the way we do
mm-hmm.
because of Trump's imperfections.
Mm-hmm.
And here's the deal, folks. When you understand what's happened to the Democratic Party, you start to figure out really fast that the only thing that's standing between us and a communist, Marxist takeover of the United States of America is Donald Trump.
Yeah.
He's the only viable candidate that stands between us and them.
Yeah.
And the people shouldn't be perplexed at the evangelical community's support for Trump if they understand the trajectory mm-hmm. of the Democratic Party
right.
as evidenced by the completely radical connections and associations with Bernie Sanders and Mayor Pete Buttigieg.
Yeah.
So
yep.
what would you add to that, Brother Jim, before we get into this?
Well, folks, maybe get a little hot toddy while you're listening to this, something that'll calm your nerves down, because by the time we get done, you're going to be shaken.
And I don't think a lot of these things that we're going to talk about are really brought up. The information's there if you want to look for
That's
it.
That's right.
But I just don't see the news, you know, dealing with these kinds of things. So most people see, let's start with Buttigieg. Most people see him as just kind of an Alfred E. Newman character.
Mm-hmm.
I think our president even called him Alfred E. Newman, which is funny because he kind of looks like Alfred E. Newman. You remember from the old Mad Magazine. And, you know, Pete Buttigieg is out there lecturing everybody else on the Bible and Christianity, while his husband goes up and gives him a big kiss, mm-hmm. you know, following, you know, one of his campaign events. And I look at that and I say, you know, gee whiz, Pete, what Bible are you reading there? I mean, I guess he skipped over that little part at the beginning about Adam and Eve, you know, kind of thing. But far beyond that is the idea that Buttigieg is connected to his deceased father mm-hmm. or influenced by his deceased father, Joseph Buttigieg. And how much do you know about Joseph Buttigieg?
Not a whole lot.
Most people don't. And the reality of the situation is the apple does not fall too far from the tree.
That's what they say.
And if you just look at Buttigieg's father, you'll see something that is so radical that I think if the American people knew exactly this association and what his father was into, they would never vote for such a man as certainly the next leader of the free world.
I agree.
So the article that we're drawing here from is entitled, Pete Buttigieg's Father Was a Marxist Professor Who Lauded the Communist Manifesto by Emily Larson and Joseph Simonson, dated April 2nd, 2019. And this was a piece that appeared in the Washington Examiner. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. Let's start reading a little bit, if we could, about Pete Buttigieg.
You could almost just stop there with the title,
yeah,
couldn't you?
It's kind of
all right. So you want me to start reading?
Yeah.
Okay, folks, here we go. The Father of Democratic presidential hopeful Pete Buttigieg was a Marxist professor who spoke fondly of the Communist Manifesto and dedicated a significant portion of his academic career to the work of Italian Communist Party founder Antonio Gramsci.
I think you pronounce it Gramsci.
Gramsci is actually correct. An associate of Vladimir Lenin.
Now what I want to do is I want to make the name Antonio Gramsci, which most people have never heard of.
Yeah.
I want to make that a household name.
Yes.
Because when you look at Mayor Pete, you have to be thinking in terms of his father, which as we're going to demonstrate was heavily influenced by this man named Antonio Gramsci, a name that most people have never heard of.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, just how this article starts off, spoke fondly his father of the Communist Manifesto, dedicated a significant portion of his academic career to the work of Italian Communist Party founder Antonio Gramsci. How many people do you know that are like this? Where their dad or one of their friends or their mentor was a noted communist. Mm-hmm. I mean, do you know 5 people in your life like this? Mm-hmm. Probably not.
No.
3 people, 2 people. Most of us know nobody like this.
Right.
Yet this is the radical roots of the Democratic Party today. And this is how people and why people like this are now on a platform.
Mm-hmm.
And they're now vying for the highest office in the land.
Yeah.
So let's keep reading here.
All right. Joseph Buttigieg.
That's his father.
His father. Who died in January at the age of 71, immigrated to the U.S. in the 1970s from Malta and in 1980 joined the University of Notre Dame faculty, where he taught modern European literature and literary theory. He was an advisor to Rethinking Marxism, an academic journal that published articles, quote, that seek to discuss, elaborate, and or extend Marxian theory, close quote.
So Mayor Pete's father is connected to being an advisor to a journal entitled involving Rethinking Marxism. Yeah. People say, oh, who cares? Mm-hmm. It's just some obscure journal. But here's the reality, folks. Ideas have consequences.
Mm-hmm. Yes, amen. Well, and it says here that his daddy wanted to extend Marxian theory.
Yes, and the tool that he's using to extend Marx theory is the thinking of a guy named Antonio Gramsci.
Right, right.
Who is actually a big deal.
Yes, he is.
You know, what did, I forgot the gentleman's name that wrote the book, David Bries. He wrote a book called Seven Men, I think it is, that rule
right.
the world from the grave.
Yes.
You know, one of them is Karl Marx. Another one is Charles Darwin. Mm-hmm. You know, if I was writing a book like that, I would include Antonio Gramsci.
Yeah, I think so.
Because he's dead and gone. But his ideas are very much alive.
Yes.
Because he talked about a communism not through a gun, the force of a gun, but through what he called the long march through the institutions. So let's keep reading here in the 2000 paper.
Hold on, folks. It just gets worse. In a 2000 paper, I guess it's a 2000 page paper for Rethinking Marxism, critical of the approach of Human Rights Watch, Buttigieg, along with two other authors, refers to the Marxist Project to which we subscribe.
Yeah, Marxist Project to which we subscribe, and if you can keep reading.
All right, continuing, he's quoting here, if the Communist Manifesto was meant to liberate the proletariat, the manifesto itself in recent years needed liberating from Marxism's narrow post-Cold World orthodoxies and exclusive cadres. It has been freed, he wrote.
So they look at Marxism as the liberation of the planet.
Yeah.
And that's the difference of perspective.
Yeah.
We look at it as the enslavement of the planet.
Amen.
And it cooperates with Satan's enslavement of the world in the last days.
Oh, yes.
Revelation 13, 16 through 18. And they just thought the theory was very workable.
Yeah.
But it just needed a little better guidance.
Right.
And
right.
this was why they became so, infatuated with Antonio Gramsci.
Yes.
So go ahead if you can.
It's almost like what they're saying is, you know, Marx was good, but he didn't go quite far enough.
Right.
So let's keep reading
and
here.
His strategies were a little off.
His strategy, he needed a little modification.
Right.
Paul Kengor, a professor of Grove City College and an expert in communism and progressivism, said Buttigieg was among a group of leftist professors who focused on injecting Marxism into the wider culture. That's a key word.
That
there.
Is key.
Quoting, they're a part of a wider international community of Marxist theorists and academicians with a particular devotion to the writings of the late Italian Marxist theorist Antonio Gramsci, who died over 80 years ago. Gramsci was all about applying Marxist theory to culture and cultural institutions, what is often referred to as, and you mentioned this, a, quote, long march through the institutions, close quote, such as film, media, and especially education, close quote. Kengor told this to the Washington Examiner.
Yeah, remember earlier we had up the, we made reference to what was it, 45?
Yeah,
I'm gonna get 45, my number right.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
Goals of Communism read into the Congressional Record, January 10th, 1963. We put up 10 of those, and number 10 was public education.
Yes.
Well, now you can start seeing why there's such an interest amongst communists in taking over the school system, because Buttigieg's father was part of a select group focused on injecting Marxism into the wider culture, relying upon the writings of Antonio Gramsci, which he translated, which we'll get to in just a minute.
Yeah.
And Gramsci, in prison, wrote about a long march through the institutions. Yes. And he wrote these books called the Prison Notebooks.
Yep.
Which to me, quite frankly, when I hear that word prison notebooks, I think of Paul's prison letters.
I thought about the same thing.
And it's like a satanic imitation of Paul's prison letters, Ephesians, Colossians, Philemon, and Philippians. But this is what Gramsci said. He says the communists are going about this all wrong. If you take over through coercion or force, you're not going to have a lasting revolution. What you have to do is you have to change the hearts of the people first.
Right.
And you have to change their value system by taking over the centers of influence in the culture, which would be film, entertainment, schooling, etc.
Yeah.
And once you alter their values, they will fall like overripe fruit right into your hands, and coercion won't even be necessary.
That's right.
And this is what Gramsci, this is his contribution to the worldwide communist revolution. Mm-hmm. And this is who Buttigieg's father is a student of. Let's keep reading here.
Yeah, it gets worse. The elder Buttigieg was best known as one of the world's leading scholars of Gramsci. Boy, Gramsci thought cultural change was critical to dismantling capitalism. Nevertheless, although critical of certain aspects of Bolshevism, Gramsci endorsed Vladimir Lenin's maximalist politics and identified within the Leninist faction of the Italian communists. He went to Moscow in 1922 as the official representative of the Italian Communist Party and returned home to lead the resistance against Italy's Prime Minister Benito Mussolini on the orders of Lenin, while his new wife and children stayed in the USSR. Those efforts landed Gramsci in an Italian prison, where he lived much of his brief life, which ended in 1937 at the age of 96.
But he didn't waste any time in prison.
Here we go.
That's where the prison notebooks come from.
Yes, yet his time behind bars was also some of his most prolific, leading to a collection of essays called The Prison Notebooks. Buttigieg completed the authoritative English translation of Gramsci's Prison Notebooks. Let me read that again. Buttigieg completed the authoritative English translation of Gramsci's Prison Notebooks, and his articles on Gramsci's have been translated into 5 languages. Buttigieg was a founding member and president of the International Gramsci Society, an organization that aims to, quote, facilitate communication and the exchange of information among the very large number of individuals from all over the world who are interested in Antonio Gramsci's life and work and in the presence of his thought in contemporary culture, close quote.
Now, the two big things are, A, the prison notebooks and why they existed. He was trying to alter communist...
It's just their methodology.
Into, instead of at the barrel of a gun, it's the long march through the institutions. And beyond that, we have those prison notebooks translated into English. I guess the NIV version of the prison notebooks.
The message.
And who does the translation?
Bum, bum, bum.
Joseph Buttigieg.
Yeah.
Pete Buttigieg's dad.
His daddy.
And beyond that, if that weren't enough, Buttigieg, his father, Joseph, goes on and he's the founding member and president of the International Gramsci Society. And in fact, in this particular article, I don't know if we have a shot of it, but there's a picture of the elder Buttigieg, you know, speaking in front of that little group. And probably at the time he would have never thought that his son would become a mayor and then ultimately run for president of the United States and would be on the world stage.
He could only hope.
And actually, as I watched some of the presidential debate that just aired, he was like the adult in the room. You know, the other ones were acting like kids, and it was like he was trying to break up a fight, and people look at him as if he's some sort of, you know, future leader of the United States. Do they understand who Antonio Gramsci was and the influence Gramsci had on the communist movement and the influence Gramsci had on Buttigieg's father? I mean, does any news outlet cover this that I can think of? I can't think of any.
Yeah, I haven't heard of any of this on cable TV.
And fortunately, we're living in the internet age where these types of articles are available to us. Mm-hmm. But has this philosophy of the elder rubbed off on the younger? Here at the top of page 3, where it says a self-described, mm-hmm. would you mind reading that?
All right.
Paragraph to us.
All right. A self-described progressive, now we're talking about Pete, has called to abolish the electoral college system. He supports a pathway to citizenship for illegal immigrants in the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals program and thinks that, this is Pete, that climate change is a national security threat. In another MSNBC interview in February, Pete said that socialism is, quoting, is a word in American politics that has basically lost all meaning, close quote, and, quoting, has been used as a kill switch to stop an idea from being talked about, close quote.
So is the elder Buttigieg rubbed off on the younger? Well,
look at this here.
Pete, the younger, wants to, look at this. This cracks me up. Abolish the electoral college system. Well, isn't that part of the Constitution?
Yes.
I mean, I didn't know you could just wave a wand and make part of the Constitution disappear. And if you can make that part of the Constitution disappear, why not the rest of it?
Mm-hmm.
Particularly those parts of it that talk about limited government and inalienable rights and the First Amendment and all those kinds of things. And by the way, folks, the liberals out there want to get rid of the electoral college.
Yes.
And the answer to that is very simple. What they want to do is move to a popular vote
mm-hmm.
where you can rack up majorities mm-hmm. on the East Coast and the West Coast,
right.
California and New York,
right.
therefore will control who becomes our future
That's
president.
Exactly right.
And if we're going to go to that system, then you'll never, ever in your lifetime see a presidential candidate in any of the flyover states.
No.
There's no need for them to go there.
But
our founding fathers were smart enough to devise a system where people are not elected to the presidency based on a popular vote because mm-hmm. they wanted every state to have an input.
Yep.
And that's why you have primaries in Iowa and these other, you know, flyover type states.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
if you get rid of the Electoral College, all of that will disappear.
That's right.
The only thing that matters is the people in New York and California.
That's right.
And we know which direction they're going. They're moving
yes.
in more of a liberal, progressive fashion.
Yep.
And if you're looking for some good stuff on the Electoral College, I'll recommend a writer to you. Her name is Tara Ross. She's got books out on the Electoral College. I noticed that Dennis Prager takes her stuff and puts it out on his brief, you know, 5 to 6 minute videos.
Mm-hmm.
So if you want to actually get a defense for why the Electoral College is a good thing and not a bad thing, I recommend the writer Tara Ross.
Awesome.
But Buttigieg says, just get rid of the Electoral College. And then Buttigieg wants, of course, a pathway mm-hmm. to citizenship
mm-hmm.
for illegal immigrants. And this is where social justice comes in and mm-hmm. they start misquoting the Bible and they start saying, well, Jesus was an immigrant.
Mm-hmm.
And they make it sound as if you've got to be Christ-like compassionate towards immigrants. Folks, these people could care less about the immigrants. What they want is power.
And they could care less about Christ.
And they could care less about Christ, other than twisting his words for their own benefit.
That's right.
And that's why Jeff Dornick's book,
that's right.
where we all contributed, you know, social mm-hmm. injustice, I think is a very helpful
mm-hmm.
Contribution. But the reality of the situation is they're interested in power. They're interested in people coming across the border. By the way, God is the one that ordained borders, did he not?
Yes, sir.
They want people coming across the border. They want them tied into all of these sort of welfare type programs.
Yep.
And if you get them hooked into that, they'll never stop voting for the
exactly
party
right.
that promises to expand and expand yep. and expand those programs.
Right.
And it's a way for the Democrats basically to stay in power forever.
Mm-hmm.
Their goal is not compassion, but power. And this is how they flipped my home state of California.
Yeah.
And most people don't remember this, but California used to be a reddish state, light red.
I know. Yeah.
And when I grew up there, of course, Ronald Reagan came from California.
Yeah, he did.
And Richard Nixon carried California in his victorious presidential runs. And beyond that, George Herbert Walker Bush, 1988, carried California. But somehow they were able to flip California into the blue column. And it's not just blue, it's dark blue. Mm-hmm. It's one party rule. And how did they flip it? They flipped it through immigration. Mm-hmm. And so this is why Buttigieg wants this pathway to citizenship for illegal immigrants. Yeah. It's what they want to do with the state of Texas. They don't want us to be red anymore. They want us to be sort of purplish. Mm-hmm. And people say it'll never happen to Texas. Well, that's what they told me about California.
That's right.
And that's think about this, folks. If Texas flips from the red column to the blue column, mathematically, from the Electoral College, which, by the way, these people don't like anyway, there is no pathway to the presidency for a Republican. You will never see a Republican president ever again in your lifetime if they're able to flip Texas.
Right.
Like they did California.
Yeah.
And so that's what this pathway to citizenship for illegal immigrants is about.
Yeah.
Is about. And feel free to chime in.
Yeah,
let me just say one thing. I might just start preaching here.
One thing here that just really stands out when you ask the question about is Pete, has he been influenced by his daddy? Then you look at the last thing we said here that he says, Pete says here that the word socialism now, it has been used as a kill switch to stop an idea from being talked about. So that this is leveled at us.
Yes.
Right? That anytime we speak against socialism, what we're doing, we are killing ideas.
Yes.
See?
Well, that's part of the Gramsci method of shifting the values of the culture.
Right. Right.
And this is why they want to hijack Christianity.
Oh, yeah.
Because Christianity is something that, you know, informs the culture.
It does.
So we got to come up with a version of Christianity that's more sympathetic to the totalitarian mindset that we have.
Social justice.
Yes. And, of course, Pete Buttigieg looks at climate change as a national security threat. Every time I see something like that, it cracks me up. You mean like nuclear weapons, climate change, is that important? Terrorism, it's as important as that. And the reason, of course, is the management by crisis philosophy.
Mm-hmm. Right.
That was first espoused by Rahm Emanuel.
Oh, good old Rahm.
Remember? And he said, never let a crisis go to waste.
Yep.
And basically what he means by that is we need a crisis. Mm-hmm. Because once you have a crisis, it gives the government an excuse to get larger and larger and larger.
Right.
The problem is we want global government, so we need a global crisis.
Right.
Aha! We've got global climate change.
Yes.
And if we buy into that, then we'll buy into this idea that we need global government to regulate the crisis for us so we can all be safe.
Oh,
let's learn a little bit more about this Antonio Gramsci from an article by Chuck Morse, M-O-R-S-E, entitled Enthralled by Communism, posted at, what is that, skynews.com. What does he say here about Antonio Gramsci?
All right. This is what Chuck Morse says.
And we want Antonio Gramsci to be a household name.
Yes.
That's why we're going through this.
Repeat after me, Antonio Gramsci. The original strategy to destroy America, let that sink in for a second, employed by the Frankfurt School, came from Italian communist Antonio Gramsci, who realized that in order to achieve a socialist victory, cultural institutions would have to be infiltrated and subverted. Gramsci realized that America, steeped in traditions of freedom and liberty, would never succumb to a frontal attack.
There you go.
That's it.
And that's what Reagan was talking about. This is the last stand. Mm-hmm. If this falls, you've got nowhere else to go. Global communism basically wins. And that's why the name of the game is to alter our institutions and alter our value system.
Mm-hmm.
And then we fall like, as the saying goes, overripe fruit into their hands.
And guess what? May I just make a quick
comment? Of course, yeah.
We know, what we just read, we know that mm-hmm. because Pete's daddy translated it.
That's, there you go. And then it was translated into five languages.
And then it was translated into five other languages. Yeah.
Well, here's another quote from, let's see, this one comes from George Martin. Gramsci seems to have obtained his ideas from the Catholic Jesuits.
Mm-hmm.
Catholic author George Marlin writes, Gramsci advised Marxists to achieve power by democratic means and then to use it to destroy Christian hegemony, and this is called the Gramsci principle.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Notice this writing from George George Marlin talking about the Gramsci
principle. Oh my gosh, folks. Okay, quoting the Gramsci principle. French journalist last name is Ravel, pointed out, quoting, he pointed this out, was that Marxists must begin by influencing the culture, winning the intellectuals, the teachers, implanting itself in the press, the media, and the publishing houses, close quote. Somewhat surprisingly, Gramsci pointed to the Jesuits' response to the Reformation as a model.
Wow.
Marxists had to create a cultural, this would be cultura capillare, or capillary culture, that would infuse itself into every nook and cranny of the body politic.
Does it sound like they've been successful? I mean, they've been astonishingly successful when you understand their strategy.
Yes, yes.
I'm reminded of 2 Corinthians 2, verse 11, where the Apostle Paul of Satan says we are not ignorant of Satan's schemes.
Right.
And I'm afraid, Brother Jim, myself included, until I started reading some of this stuff, we have been largely uninformed of what Satan is doing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when I used to play basketball back in the day, we would spend a lot of time with game film. You know, the team we were going to play that week, we would watch films of them playing because we would want to know what their strategies are.
Sure.
We don't do game film today in evangelical Christianity. Mm-hmm. We don't even know what Satan is doing.
Right.
We don't even understand the strategy he is using to topple the greatest system of government that has ever been given as a gift to mankind, that has given us. And you were bringing some of this up in our prayer time a little earlier, that has given us more freedom economically and politically than any other system on the face of the earth. Do you think if we were in Iran or Saudi Arabia or China or, what is it, North Korea, do you think we would be able to sit here in front of a camera and broadcast our thoughts out to anybody that wants to hear them?
No, what you would see is a video of us up to here in the ground.
That's right. And we have this gift called the United States.
We do.
And the communists apparently understand it and they see it as the last stand.
Yeah.
And they're trying to subvert it as we speak. They know it's not going to fall through the force of weaponry.
Right.
It's going to fall through what my friend Brandon House calls information operation, where you change the value system of the people.
Yeah.
You change their Christianity. And then you make them, maybe you don't make them full-blown communists, but they're just a little less resistant to communism. And the Marxist agenda comes right on in.
Yeah. There's a twofold problem.
Let's
ignorance.
Yes.
And apathy.